Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 129, entitled, How to Doctor Yourself with Vitamin C, Niacin, and Orthomolecular Medicine, I chat with Dr. Andrew Saul. Dr. Andrew Saul is a world-renowned therapeutic nutrition specialist, the creator of That Vitamin Movie, founder of DoctorYourself.com, and known by many as the Mega Vitamin Man. In today's episode, Dr. Saul talks about the power of taking high-dose vitamin C, why niacin can change your life, and how to doctor yourself to keep yourself healthy. Dr. Saul shares with us his vitamin C protocol, what to do if you get really sick, why Linus Pauling was right all along with his vitamin C research, and why the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want you to take vitamins. If you're wondering what you can do right now to become a healthier man, prevent yourself from getting sick, and how to use vitamins to heal yourself if you do become sick, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey guys, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now to get ready for the launch of our very own natural and organic supplement line. Elite Life Nutrition is the official supplement brand for the Elite Man Podcast, and we're finally coming out with our very own vitamins, minerals, herbs, and supplements to help you become as healthy as possible. We're just about ready to finally unroll our first products in a couple of weeks. I know I mentioned this a few weeks back, and there was a slight delay in the manufacturing, but we're finally ready. And if you want to know exactly how to get your hands on them, sign up for our email newsletter right now. These will be the highest quality and purest supplements on the market. EliteLifeNutrition.com. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Andrew Saul. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Oh, glad to be here.
I'm a really big fan of your work. I've been studying your stuff for years, reading up on your all your great information on DoctorYourself.com. I've read a number of your books, and today I'm really excited. I've been trying to actually get you on the show now for a while, so I'm really excited that we finally got you on.
Well, I appreciate that. That's a very nice compliment, and that means a lot to me.
So let's start first with something that I take all the time, something that I'm really interested in, and I think I actually found it a number of years ago from listening to one of the podcasts you were on, and it was vitamin C. So it's one of my favorite topics as far as vitamins go. What does your protocol look like for vitamin C? Let's kind of start there, and then I want to kind of break things down and kind of ask you some more specific questions about C. What's the like typical protocol, though, for kind of general use for everyone in America, or what should they be taking?
Well, the plan that I recommend is you take enough C to be symptom-free, whatever the amount might be. Now, I know that's a little on the corny side, but it is the simplest way to look at it because everybody wants to know, how much do I need? And the answer is, we do not know. Even you are not the same day to day if you're under stress or you're not, if you're sick or you're well. The amount of vitamin C a person needs is an unknown. We have a rough idea. The government says we need less than 100 milligrams a day, which is, well, ridiculous. And animals, most of which make their own vitamin C, fleas, whales, earthworms, dogs, cats, cows, deer, mice, these animals will make vitamin C themselves. So the best way to tell how much we need is to look how much, look and see how much animals make. And most animals make, per human body weight equivalent, between 2 and 15,000 milligrams of C a day. Now, why would nature have animals manufacturing 2,000 to 15,000 milligrams of C a day, and the RDA for people is 100? So we start there. The first thing we have to understand is that the difference between what you're told and what is actually done in nature is, well, it's a pretty big gap. So I would recommend that people start by doing what almost all animals do. And since you can't make your own C, you can take it. and take between 2 and 15,000 milligrams of C a day. A gorilla gets about 4,500, and gorillas, like us, cannot make their own vitamin C, but they eat that. And monkeys, relatively small monkeys weighing in around 20, 25 pounds, are known and have been measured to consume around 600 milligrams of vitamin C a day. Now, this is not a lot of vitamin C until you realize once again that that monkey is only about 1/8 of a human body weight. And then you multiply 600 by 8, and 8 times 6 is still 48. So that's not quite 5,000 milligrams a day for a monkey. You see where this is going?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's if you're well. Now, if you're sick, your need is higher. Let's take goats, for example. A goat, when it's sick, can make 50,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And a goat is smaller than a human being. Now, why would a goat make 50,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day when it's sick? And the answer, of course, is because nature knows what it's doing. So our need for vitamin C goes up. And it was Dr. Robert Fulton Cathcart III, a medical doctor, he happened to be an orthopedic surgeon, who some decades ago took a close look at this. And Dr. Cathcart found the simplest way to tell how much vitamin C you need when you're sick is to take a lot of C until you get better. Now, that is a very elementary concept, but very few people actually do it because we suffer from a belief system. This belief system says the RDA of 100 milligrams or less a day is adequate for pretty much everybody. And you will hear on the internet or from physicians or on TV news or elsewhere that you can't even hold more than a few hundred milligrams of vitamin C a day. If you take more than that, you are simply wasting your money or possibly hurting yourself. Now, why would animals make so much C if they only needed a few hundred milligrams a day? Doesn't make sense. So somebody's wrong, and I think the animals are not wrong. They have to be right or they die. They've been doing this for millions of years. The government, unfortunately, is not quite that experienced and not quite that wise. Therefore, we copy nature, and it sounds weird. I'm copying nature by taking megadoses of C? And the answer is yes, because you can't make it. So taking lots of vitamin C is actually a natural thing to do. Why are we in this situation? Because it takes 4 enzymes to take glucose, the simple sugar you may remember from high school chemistry. Glucose is the smallest sugar. It's C6H12O6. And it takes 4 enzymes to knock off 4 hydrogens and rearrange the molecule to make C6H8O6, which is ascorbic acid or vitamin C. It takes 4 enzymes to do that. Animals can do this in their liver. Your dog can do that. A horse can do that. A lion can do that. A fish can do that. But fruit bats, guinea pigs, and primates, including humans, cannot. We have 3 of the 4 enzymes. We do not have L-guanylactone oxidase. And if your parents ask you what you learned in school today, now you have something to tell them. So because we have 3 of the 4 enzymes, isn't that intriguing? Mm. Maybe somewhere a long, long time ago, we lost the ability. We lost the enzyme. Maybe there was a mutation, or maybe there was some other advantage in not having that and eating lots of fruit instead. Of course, today we don't eat lots of fruit. Today we eat lots of junk food. We eat lots of sugar. And we really are not out there, even when we eat fruit, it's usually not fresh picked. Monkeys, on the other hand, have a completely different life. And I don't think I'd want to live the monkey's life, but in terms of getting enough vitamin C, they've got us smoked. So you put all this together, and now the question is, how much C do I take? You take enough to feel good. When you're well, that might be a few thousand milligrams a day, or maybe less. You might do well on a few hundred milligrams. I don't think anybody does well on the RDA. It's too little. But when you're sick, your need for vitamin C skyrockets. Post-surgically, your need for vitamin C skyrockets. When I've had pneumonia, and everybody gets sick, including me, When I've had pneumonia, I take over 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And that stops the cough, brings down the fever, and resolves the illness. Dr. Frederick Robert Klenner, a board-certified chest physician, a chest specialist who knew a lot about pneumonia, he could treat viral pneumonia and cure it in 72 hours with massive doses of vitamin C. And massive doses, tens of thousands of milligrams. Now, Dr. Cathcart, remember him? Dr. Cathcart went on to say that when you're sick, you indicate enough vitamin C because you're getting well. Dr. Klenner would agree. But then the question is, well, how do I know I'm not taking too much? And the answer is because when you get to saturation of vitamin C, you have loose stool or a lot of flatulence, a lot of gas or rumbling in the stomach. This is called bowel tolerance. And bowel tolerance is the marker for saturation of oral dosing of vitamin C. People that get intravenous vitamin C will not have this symptom. This is only with oral dosing of C. So the bowel tolerance concept is the answer, finally, to your question. You take enough vitamin C to be symptom-free, but not so much as causes you discomfort. If you've got an upset stomach or rumbling in the belly or a lot of gas or loose stool, back off. But if you're sick, take more. And it's sort of like flying a plane. You want to be over the mountains and under the stars. Somewhere in there is a safe place to fly. And this varies tremendously from person to person and even from day to day. So bowel tolerance is a way that anyone can tell. I've taught this to children. I've taught this to kids that are 7 or 8 years old, and they can manage their own vitamin C level knowing this. And the really funny thing is one day my grandson, who at the time was not even four, he absconded with the chewable vitamin C's, and his mother didn't know that, and he just went off with them. She found this out later. And he came back because he wasn't feeling well, so he took the chewable C's, got himself to bowel tolerance, and put the bottle back. Now, if a 3 or 4 or 8 year old can understand this, it's a pretty simple concept. Keep in mind that all of this sounds out there, but it's not. Dr. Cathcart and Dr. Klenner and all the other doctors, orthomolecular physicians that use vitamin C, have tested this 6 ways from Tuesday. This has been going on for a long time. Let me tell you how long. Dr. Klenner was practicing in the 1940s, 1950s. Dr. Cathcart in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. We have Dr. Hugh Reardon of the Reardon Clinic, Dr. Ron Hunninghacke, Dr. Thomas Levy. These are all experts, and they've all been saying exactly the same thing. So real doctors do urge megadoses of C. And if your doctor doesn't, you have an old-fashioned doctor.
I mean, I love a lot of the information you shared, and I want to follow up in a minute on some of that. First, though, just so our audience knows, what is your background specifically in medicine, and do you have a orthomolecular training in all sorts of vitamin therapy?
No, not really. First of all, I am not a physician. A lot of people think I am, but that's because I hang around with a lot of these orthomolecular doctors, and it kind of rubs off on you. Mm-hmm. But I am not a physician. In college, I was pre-med. I was heading towards medical school, but life sometimes does interesting things, and that's not the way it worked out. Actually, I became interested in vitamin therapy when I became a father, and my firstborn was born when I was 22. Now, at the time, that wasn't very young, but nowadays, it seems pretty young, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then my second child when I was 24. So all of a sudden, I had to know about nutrition. I had to know how to keep kids well, and this really put the pressure on me to learn a lot. And that's when the learning really happened, when I had kids. Now, I do have a bachelor's degree in biology. I have a master's degree in biology and education. I have a PhD, a non-traditional one, in human ethology, which is the biology of behavior. I've taught at the high school level, I've taught at the university level, and I've taught at the doctoral level. So I have a lot of teaching experience. So I'm a teacher, not a physician. Mm-hmm. As far as getting a degree in orthomolecular medicine, if you find a place that offers one, go for it. But I haven't seen it yet. Orthomolecular medicine is still regarded, which is weird, nutritional medicine, something that we would think would be of interest to doctors, it's still regarded as fringe, and it has been marginalized. When you look at the news, most of the articles or reports on vitamins are in some way critical of them. And that's unfortunate because people are being warned off the thing that's safer for them. Drugs, expensive and dangerous. Yeah, but we got to have them. Vitamins, cheap and safe and effective. Well, don't take them. So we learn about nutritional medicine either from physicians who know what they're doing, and that's what I've done, or by reading, or by experience, or by a combination of all three. I was very fortunate to work with Dr. Abram Hoffer, who was really the founding father of nutritional medicine. He started his research and practice in the early 1950s. And I myself have been involved in this for 41 years. So over the years, I have learned from these great physicians, and all I'm doing is telling the public, copy them. My dad used to tell me that if you really want to know how to do something, if you really want to know the answer, go to the organ grinder, not the monkey.
Why do you think traditional medicine has kind of turned away from these guys, these, you know, Abram Hoffers of the world, Thomas Levy's, even Linus Pauling's, where they, you know, went out of their way to basically disprove all his incredible work and, you know, made his studies and his research seem like it was just so crazy and out there. And even when they tried to replicate it, they didn't do it the right way purposely so that it would look bad on kind of his record and you know, prove that it didn't work. Why do you think there's such a backlash against this stuff?
You know, it's a good point. You're referring, among other things, to the famous Mayo Clinic study that was supposed to replicate Linus Pauling's and Dr. Ewan Cameron's use of vitamin C against cancer. And the Mayo Clinic said they would replicate the work, and they did not. So they did a different experiment, and it failed, whereas Pauling and Cameron used vitamin C, and it worked. Cancer patients were living five times longer if they had lots of vitamin C. Now, when you're a young person, that doesn't have a lot of significance, but sooner or later, someone in your family is going to have cancer. And whether you cure it or not, to have five times longer lifespan, in other words, 5 years instead of 1 year, what's that worth? Mm-hmm. Not to mention better quality of life and less pain. So why would this disparagement be done? I think part of it is because medical doctors go to medical school where they're taught medicine, and they get a degree in medicine, and they practice medicine, and they prescribe medicines. Substitute the word nutrition in there, and it doesn't really fit. I go to a nutritional doctor who went to nutritional school and has a degree in nutrition and prescribes nutrients. It's just not there. So they never learned it. In medical school, you have an awful lot of material, and I have taught in chiropractic college, I've taught clinical nutrition, and I have done some guest lecturing to medical doctors, even in hospitals and medical schools. And the fact of the matter is, their curriculum is full of stuff except high-dose vitamin therapy. It's simply not taught. And if the doctor doesn't know, doctors have this, this issue. They feel, after all their education, if they haven't been taught it, it isn't worth knowing. And we have a problem because we think if the doctor doesn't do it, it also isn't worth knowing. Mm-hmm. And that's how all of this gets set aside. It's not really a conspiracy against it. It's simply ignoring it. And people have been ignoring high-dose vitamin C therapy since at least 1935, when Dr. Klaus Jungblut, a professor at Columbia University, and he was a physician, showed that vitamin C could reduce the symptoms or even reverse polio. Now, this is in the mid-1930s when we had a president in the White House who was crippled because he had had polio.
Wow.
Now, this is how far back the bias goes. Now, wouldn't you think if we had a president with polio and we learned that vitamin C stops polio, wouldn't you think that everybody would kind of get into that?
Yeah.
And, And this is close to 80 years ago. So what I keep telling people is this is new to you, but it isn't new. High dose vitamin therapy is well established, but it's ignored. And that is the big advantage of the internet. There was a time when you couldn't find the papers, you couldn't find the research unless you went to a library and plowed through a lot of files and materials. But now with the internet, you can go to any library sitting at your desk. I've written quite a few books, and I go to the library online. Well, we can all do that. At DrYourself.com, at my website, I have references there, and the website's peer-reviewed. So I actually have doctors who practice nutritional medicine look over my articles. In fact, some of them have been critiqued by Abram Hoffer himself. So we have this wonderful, powerful evidence of doctors curing patients with vitamins. And this is my entire focus. Let's find the doctors that cure their patients with nutrition, and let's do exactly what they do. I would think every doctor would find that fascinating. The pharmaceutical industry does not find that fascinating. This is a direct threat to pharmaceutical business. If people are getting well on cheap vitamins, they won't need expensive drugs. It's not a conspiracy. It's just human nature. Most vitamin powders are made by pharmaceutical companies. They do make money off vitamins, but not very much. Ascorbic acid vitamin C, you can buy online for $35 a kilogram. That's 2.2 pounds. So vitamin C is around $15 to $20 a pound, sometimes less. You're just not going to make money at that. Some pharmaceutical drugs are thousands of dollars per pill. So you follow the money, and it explains a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, explains a ton. I started taking the powder after listening to, I think it was one of the interview, it might have been Abel James' interview with you. Mm-hmm. Is the powder, and the thing is too with the powder, it lasts forever. Like you said, you know, a pound of that's 15, 20 bucks. The thing will last you a few months. And, you know, I'm taking right now probably 3 to 5 grams of vitamin C a day. Have been taking it since this past winter because I was, you know, I'd take it here and there, but wasn't really taking it routinely daily. But after I got sick, very sick this past winter, had the flu at one point, had viral pneumonia, actually, which I want to get back to in a minute as well. I had a couple of just like sicknesses all the time. I just had a really crappy winter, and then I just decided I was going to load up on vitamin C and stick to it. So I've been taking 3 to 5 religiously a day and been, you know, feeling great these past, you know, 8-9 months. But I got on the powder to begin with. So what is superior? Is the powder better than the pill? Is the tablet better? Is the capsule better than the tablet? They're all the same. Does it really matter at the end of the day? And also, how much water should you be consuming when you have the vitamin C?
All right. First of all, Abel's a good guy, and I really enjoyed talking to him a lot. And he's a vitamin C fan just like you, just like me, just like Linus Pauling. In fact, we all should be, because it just makes us happy. It makes us healthy. It makes us feel good. It makes our life great. And it's cheap. Vitamin C is like exercise. People ask me, what exercise is best for me? The answer is the one you'll do. And with vitamin C, the form of vitamin C that's best for you is the one you will take a lot of. For most people, it's going to be capsules or tablets because it's convenient. Powder is better in several ways. First of all, it's a little cheaper. Sometimes it's a lot cheaper. The second advantage of powder is that it is going to get you to drink liquid because you're going to put it in something. And most of us need to have more liquids. It was Ronald Reagan, President Ronald Reagan's personal physician, Dr. Ralph Bookman, who said that we should have 10 glasses of liquid a day. Now, Richard Simmons recommends 8. So we're talking a physician now saying 10. We tend to not be hydrated enough. And when you take the C powder, you got to put it in juice or water. So that's going to help you remember to drink. You wouldn't think so, but in elderly people, the sense of thirst goes down. So elderly folks sometimes actually are going to not get enough liquid simply because they don't have the urge, they don't have the thirst that we do when we're younger. But if the elderly were all taking their vitamin C, that would guarantee that they would have liquid because it would be some part of their routine. Vitamin C chewables are really good for kids because they taste great. You can also send them to school with the kids because they look like candy. You can't really take vitamins in schools. They don't allow it. You can't have a bunch of kids taking a bunch of capsules and tablets, obviously. And I know because I've taught school, and you can't allow that. You can get a doctor's prescription and have your kid take the vitamin C at school, but then they call them out of class and they make a big deal out of it. So the simplest thing to do is just send these nice colored heart-shaped flavored chewable vitamin C's in a little plastic bag and your child can take them that way. Or you can just have the kid have them before they get on the bus and the moment they get home. Chewables are extremely popular because they taste good. They're also the most expensive form. When you get chewable vitamin C, you want to be sure that it's non-acidic. Now, most vitamin C is ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid is not a strong acid. It's a little weaker than vinegar, but it's a little stronger than an orange. If you have a chewable vitamin C, you want the non-acidic forms of vitamin C, such as calcium ascorbate, because that will not harm the tooth enamel. When you put vitamin C in water, you should drink that down and then have a little bit of extra water or juice afterwards as a rinse. When I gave vitamin C powder to my kids when they were little, and they're now fully grown adults in their late 30s and early 40s, I would give them the vitamin C powder and juice, and they'd look up and say, rinse, and that was the next step. So vitamin C powder has another advantage. It is pure. There are no excipients, no tableting ingredients, no fillers in it. Some people that take vitamin C are having trouble not with the vitamin C, which they think is perhaps for them an issue, but they're having trouble with the tablet itself. Tablet excipients are pretty benign. Very few people have trouble with them. But let's say you were really sensitive. Well, then you might. Vitamin C powder has no excipients at all. There's no tableting ingredients, nothing to glue the tablet together to keep it from being a pile of powder in the bottle, which, by the way, is why they use these excipients. They're doing it simply to hold a pill together. And most of those excipients are fairly well tested and fairly safe. But you can avoid the whole issue by using ascorbic acid powder. And finally, as you said, the shelf life is longest on ascorbic acid powder. It will keep for years as long as it's dry. You can get liquid vitamin C for babies. This has the shortest shelf life. Liquid vitamin C can be recharged, though, by your simply adding a little vitamin C powder to the liquid C every other day and then keep it in the refrigerator. Liquid C for babies works very well. They're delicious. My kids got vitamin C literally from the day they were born. And my grandchildren have been getting vitamin C literally since the day they were born, in the hospital, in fact. That's how soon we did it. So any way you want to take the C is good. The idea is to take as much as you can. One more point. A lot of people think ascorbic acid is in some way inferior because it's made from starch in a laboratory or a factory. People think it is not natural. I want to put that one to bed right away. First of all, Linus Pauling said ascorbic acid is vitamin C. Dr. Pauling has two more Nobel Prizes than most of his critics. I'm going to go with him. But more to the point, remember when I mentioned that animals make their own vitamin C?
Yeah.
You know what they make?
Ascorbic acid.
Yes, sir, they do. They make ascorbic acid. That's nature's own. That's what animals make. They make ascorbic acid. There's not a cherry or orange or any other plant in sight for these animals. They are making their own ascorbic acid. Whether it's a flea or a whale or an elk, whatever that animal is, a black bear, a cougar, no matter what that animal is, with a few exceptions mentioned earlier, they're making their own C, and they make ascorbic acid. So ascorbic acid must be natural. and that's the cheap stuff. And almost all research showing that vitamin C cures disease has in fact used ascorbic acid. So don't be buffaloed. People that are telling you that ascorbic acid is bad are usually trying to sell you something expensive.
Hey, gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? Man, I talk about this group all the time, but for good reason. The Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the hands-down one collection of like-minded men you have to be a part of. I'm talking about world-class performers here. Authors, podcasters, life coaches, dating coaches, relationship experts, health and fitness experts, nutritionists, doctors. There's so many awesome professionals in this group willing to lend you a hand, give you advice, give you their best tips and strategies and techniques for mastering life and becoming the best man you can be. And there's thousands of incredible, regular, awesome dudes like yourself in this group as well, who share advice, who share information, who inspire each other and take each other to the next level of becoming the best version of themselves. So join the group right now if you haven't already. I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I love this group. It's so inspiring. It's incredible. You have to be a part of it if you're not a part of it yet. Just ask any one of the thousands of guys who are in this group. We absolutely love it. We talk about it every day. We're involved every day. It's incredible, and I want you to be a part of it too. So go to EliteManMastermind.com. It's going to forward you right to Facebook, or just go to Facebook and type in Elite Man Mastermind. You can join the group that way as well. Either way, I'll see you on the inside, guys. So keep kicking ass and taking names.
What is in like things, the more expensive stuff, like the buffered vitamin C? What is it in that specifically that makes it more tolerable in the stomach?
Buffered vitamin C could be ascorbic acid in a buffer base such as calcium or some other powder that simply acts to neutralize it. You can buffer with sodium bicarbonate or baking soda. Linus Pauling suggested that. By the way, if you mix the baking soda with the ascorbic acid, it'll make a nice frothy, fizzy drink. The type of vitamin C that is naturally buffered is calcium ascorbate. So I mentioned that you might have vitamin C as ascorbic acid in a tablet that contains a buffer such as calcium powder, or you can just take a calcium tablet with your vitamin C, or if you don't need that extra calcium, you can take a magnesium tablet with your vitamin C. That will buffer it. But calcium ascorbate is naturally buffered. It's pH neutral. You can also take sodium ascorbate, which is also pH neutral, but a lot of folks are concerned about the extra sodium. I recommend that you go on a low-salt diet, which you should do anyway, and not worry about having the sodium ascorbate. The amount of sodium in sodium ascorbate is about 11 or 12%. So if you are taking 10,000 milligrams a day of sodium ascorbate, you're only getting about 1,200 milligrams of sodium, and you get that in one piece of fried chicken, one piece of fried chicken. The other form of buffered vitamin C would be ascorbyl palmitate. You don't see that much anymore. There's also liposomal vitamin C, which is non-acidic, but very expensive. I've seen it running in at nearly a dollar per 1,000 milligrams. That's kind of a lot, whereas ascorbic acid is much cheaper. And there's the ultimate buffer, and that's food. Just take vitamin C with a meal. And if you don't want to eat, just take vitamin C with a big glass of water, because the pH becomes less acidic simply by dissolving it. If you're going to dye Easter eggs, you have to use vinegar in the water. And if you use too much water and too little vinegar, it won't work as well. So by diluting with water, you reduce acidity. The simplest way to buffer vitamin C is to have something else in your stomach. When you take it on an empty stomach, then you might want the buffered form if you're real sensitive or if you're taking a lot, or just have it with a snack.
When you're really sick, what form do you recommend most? Because I feel like, you know, if you have some kind of flu or pneumonia, taking all that buffered vitamin C probably wouldn't be healthy at some point when you're taking in like too much calcium, if it's calcium ascorbate or one of the other forms. Is that right?
Yes. If you were really sick and you were taking 100,000 milligrams a day of calcium ascorbate, about 11% of that is calcium, and that would be bad. Mm-hmm. Not as bad as you think, because the body does not readily overabsorb calcium, but I concede the point that you wouldn't want to do it. when somebody is really, really sick, they should have an IV. But if they're home or they're in a place where they can't get a vitamin C IV, they can take ascorbic acid with food or liquid. And I will take as much as 15,000 milligrams of ascorbic acid at a time. I want to tell you I don't like it, but I'll do it when I'm sick. Sometimes I'm so sick I don't even want to take the C. In which case, then I apply the Mary Poppins School of Medicine learning that I had. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. If you want somebody to take C and they're sick, or if it's a child, or heaven forbid, a teenager, what you do is you cut a deal and you bribe them. You say, look, here's your C. I'm putting all the C in this little bit of juice here. Now, over here is your favorite juice, and there's a big glass of it. It's nice and cold, and there's no vitamin C in that. So you gulp down the C and the little bit of juice, and then you can sip the good stuff. And if sweet juice doesn't work, give them a soda. Give them a candy bar. Give them some ice cream. And I'm very serious about this. If someone is sick, it's so important to get the C down them that you should cut a deal. I am not advocating sugar. I am simply saying we have to go for the greatest good. When we have illness, the trick with vitamin C is to take it very, very, very often. When I had viral pneumonia, I took 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C every 6 minutes.
Wow.
That's 20,000 milligrams an hour. In 3 hours, my fever came down 3 degrees and my cough stopped. And that's better than codeine cough medicine and extra strength acetaminophen or Tylenol. Vitamin C lowers fever. It's an antipyretic. It is an antihistamine. It is an antiviral. It is an antibiotic. It is an antitoxin. And it's an antidepressant. When you take a lot of C, you'll feel the best you've ever felt while you're being sick.
Andrew, when I was really sick with the viral pneumonia, I told you I wanted to bring that back up, and I just kind of was experimenting with the powder vitamin C and didn't really know exactly how to take it, which is also why I mentioned how much water you should be consuming. I think I put about probably, if I had to guess, maybe 12,000 or so milligrams of vitamin C into a water bottle, which is 16 ounces. And I would actually had been taking probably 20, 30,000 milligrams for a few days. I didn't really know what it was. I just thought it was a bad cold. Probably 20, 30,000 for a few days. Then I was like getting progressively sicker. So I was trying to take it more. And I actually had tried to take something along the lines of like 2,000 every 6 minutes or so. What ended up happening, though, is I took way too much vitamin C at once and just went right past the bowel tolerance and went right to the bathroom, and my stomach, like I just completely, you know, got it all out of my system, and after that I had to like really cut back on the vitamin C. But what had happened was, and you know, my assumption was I had taken way too much vitamin C with way too little water. And even though I had the viral pneumonia, it just like I couldn't process that in my body. And
yes,
I ended up, you know, obviously cutting back and kind of went back to like 20, 30,000 a day, and then also went to the doctors after that to, you know, really get it looked at, because it had been getting worse even still. But yeah, I just wanted to like kind of follow up on the importance of taking the water when you're taking large amounts of vitamin C like that.
Well, you're absolutely right. First of all, it's just a good idea to have lots of water when you're sick, even if you weren't taking any vitamin C at all. Secondly, vitamin C's bowel tolerance syndrome is actually an osmotic pressure thing in the bowel. Your body isn't giving you diarrhea because you're taking too much C. Your body's giving you diarrhea because it's changing the osmosis pattern in your bowel, and you are going to have the loose stool as a result of that. Well, if you don't have enough water, you can't have a loose stool. You got to have something to get rid of. Now, nobody's advocating diarrhea. Diarrhea is not good. Nobody is saying take enough vitamin C to have diarrhea. That is not it. Linus Pauling specifically used the words loose stool. We live in a constipated nation. Little loose stool won't hurt us. But diarrhea is bad, particularly in children. So make haste slowly. The only time you go great guns on high doses of C is if you're really sick. And if you're really sick, you should be talking to a doctor anyway. And that just makes sense. Now, if the doctor says, don't take vitamin C, well, just disregard that part. But let the doctor monitor you with a checkup and tests. And if they write you a prescription for medication, take the little piece of paper, but I would recommend you don't fill it. And if they say don't take vitamin C, I would recommend that you selectively don't listen to that advice. Because doctors that use vitamin C, medical doctors, all say the same thing. The more C you take, the sooner you'll get better. It doesn't mean you're going to get better in half an hour. It means that the disease will run its course faster and you'll be more comfortable. Sometimes you have to have medication along with a vitamin. If you need medication, for heaven's sakes, take it. But if you have vitamin C as part of your preventive program, you're less likely to need it for illness. If you are in a situation where you're ill to the point where you don't want to drink the water or can't, that means intravenous vitamin C is made for you, because then you don't even have to worry about it.
Where do you actually go? How can you go about getting intravenous vitamin C?
Any doctor can do it. Running an IVC drip is easy. Doctors know how to do that. They went to medical school. Nurses can do it. They know how to do it. They went to nursing school. As far as what you give, vitamin C is available for injection or infusion. There are a number of pharmacies that make and provide this. Any hospital, any doctor can get a hold of it. Typically, they'll say, we don't have it. So then you say, well, go and get it. And then they'll tend to stall and delay. Hospitals will say, well, we would do that, but the doctors don't want to give the C. And the doctors will say, well, we'd give the C, but the hospital rules don't allow it. They're all talking through their ears. The fact is, your doctor can give you an IV of a vitamin. If you're in the hospital, you've probably got an IV running anyway. When's the last time you went to visit somebody in a hospital and they didn't have a tube running into their vein? Nothing could be easier than patching in a bottle of vitamin C, and nothing could be smarter, because whatever you're in the hospital for, whether it's childbirth or surgery or whatever, you're going to get out of there sooner if you have more C. A classic example that's all over the media is sepsis, severe infection, which is often fatal. When they gave people lots of vitamin C, they got over the sepsis. And that is the bottom line. Hospital-borne infections are very common. Drug-resistant infections are becoming even more common. Vitamin C works against an antibiotic-resistant infection because the body has no resistance against vitamin C because it's natural to the body. So unlike a drug, which is foreign, vitamin C is natural to the body, works through the body, makes the white blood cells be able to kill and eat more bacteria. Vitamin C actually will rip the protein coat off a virus, and it'll do all this for you if you just take it. So doctors that want to know where to get the C, they can just go on the internet or you can do it for them. If they want to know how to administer it, they should know how to administer a drip by now, but if they don't, and they want more justification, at DrYourself.com, you can download a very detailed vitamin C protocol for the administration of intravenous vitamin C. It's called the Reardon Protocol. It's named after Dr. Hugh D. Reardon, a physician who is the namesake of the Reardon Clinic in Kansas. Now, the Reardon Protocol is right on the first page, the main page of DrYourself.com. Go down the vertical yellow index column on the left, and you'll see it, Reardon IVC Protocol. It's a free download. It's extremely detailed, and you can show that to any doctor. They'll know exactly what to do. Furthermore, if the hospital doesn't have vitamin C handy or they don't want to get it, at DrYourself.com, I have Dr. Cathcart's personal instructions on how to make your own intravenous vitamin C solution. Now, this is not for the public. I don't want people thinking they can make up C and jab it in their arms. No, you can't. This is for a physician. And there's a lot of good reasons why that statement is true. And it really is true. You can get what you want in cooperation with your doctor. And if your doctor won't cooperate, you've got the wrong doctor. It's your body. In times of illness, it's essential that you have all the help you can get. So Dr. Cathcart's instructions on how to make your own vitamin C intravenous solution is right at DrYourself.com. With what I've just told you, all you need to do is make it happen.
Cool. So, I mean, you pretty much got all bases covered on the site, which I love. You got the Reardon protocol. You got Dr. Cathcart's vitamin C recipe for physicians if they don't know how to make it. It's really cool, man. I love it. Just kind of switching gears up a little bit, I wanted to mention or wanted to bring up niacin because I know you're a big fan of niacin and what it's able to do in the body. Can you just quickly kind of talk about some of the benefits of taking niacin?
Yes. Niacin is good for a whole lot of things. Most vitamins are. Niacin is the smallest of all vitamins. It's actually smaller than vitamin C, and that's saying something because vitamin C is smaller than the simplest sugar. So this is one of the reasons why niacin is absorbed so well, and it's another reason why it causes a flush. So if you're cold, and a lot of the ladies are, at least it seems to me that women seem to be cold a lot. And when they take a little niacin, they find that they get a flush, they get warm. This is a vasodilation. All it is the opening up of the blood vessels in the skin a little tiny bit, which brings more blood to the surface and it makes you warm. It's sort of like a hot flash or being very embarrassed or feeling like you have a sunburn. Some people absolutely despise the niacin flush, and they can avoid this completely by taking niacinamide. Now, niacinamide will not make you warm, but it has all the other benefits of niacin except for one. And the exception is niacin will raise HDL, lower LDL, and lower triglycerides. Niacin will do that. It's widely used by physicians for that purpose. Although more of them are trying to give you statins and things like that that are dangerous, expensive, and don't work as well. But niacin lowers LDL, raises HDL spectacularly, and lowers triglycerides. So niacin will do that. Niacinamide will not. So if you don't want the flush, but you still want to use it for blood lipids, then you go to inositol hexaniacinate. Sorry about the name, but it wasn't my idea. Inositol hexaniacinate is a no-flush niacin that still will work on blood lipids, but it does not work as well as regular niacin. I would estimate it's only half as effective, which means you need twice as much. The good news is it's readily available. Some people will still flush with inositol hexaniacinate, but it's pretty unusual. With niacinamide, flushing is almost unheard of. And that is why niacinamide is so often put in B-complex vitamins and multiple vitamins. Manufacturers don't want you complaining that you had a flush. The flush is by far and away the biggest obstacle for most people to niacin. And it's a shame because niacin is good for more things, important things. It was used by Dr. William Kaufman to treat rheumatoid arthritis, and especially osteoarthritis back in the 1940s and 50s. Dr. Kaufman would give small doses very frequently through the day for several thousand milligrams a day. Dr. Abram Hoffer, my personal mentor, was a psychiatrist, and he used the vitamin niacin for treating schizophrenia and psychosis, what we now call ADHD, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, anxiety. All of these things are treatable with niacin or niacinamide. And when you consider the value here, let's see, arthritis, getting warm, mental illness, and cardiovascular disease, you're really looking at a very large segment of why people go to the doctor. So niacin is extremely valuable. And it's very cheap. Just recognize if you take niacin, you're going to flush. I recommend people start small and work their way up. If you take a tiny little bit with each meal, you'll find that that will reduce the flushing. If you like the flush, and I personally do, when you live in Rochester, New York, being warm is kind of a novelty. We're right across the lake from Canada, and we get some pretty tough winters here. I happen to like the niacin flush. But remember, you don't have to flush, just don't take niacin. Take the niacinamide or the inositol hexaniacinate alternatively.
How much niacin or niacinamide are you taking for some of the brain or mental conditions such as schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, ADD, that kind of stuff?
Dr. Hoffer's standard prescription for an adult would be about 3,000 milligrams a day for a schizophrenic. For people with lighter mental illnesses, he would give less. For people that were schizophrenic for a number of years and were much harder to treat, he would give more. I think he rarely went over 6,000 milligrams of niacin a day. Occasionally, I know he did, but it was rare. He frequently found that people did well on less than 3,000, but that was his most common prescription. I would like to emphasize to everyone listening that that is for people that are sick. That does not mean you need that much. You can simply take a little niacin and see if you feel better. And if you do, you can take a little more and see if you feel better still. And then you can take a little more, and if you don't feel any better, go back to the least amount that made you feel the best. The idea here is to be happy and healthy. It's not to see how much niacin you can hold. Take enough niacin to feel good. For me, because of the stress level I'm under as a public figure, and I'm not getting any younger, I think that my level of niacin is relatively high for a maintenance dose. I probably take 4,000 milligrams of niacin a day, more or less. But when I did that, my HDL went way up, which is good. My LDL went down, and my triglycerides went way down. And the doctors look at me and say, well, that's pretty good. What are you doing? Well, I'm taking niacin. Well, all right. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. The amount of niacin that you need is going to vary. This is a highly personal discussion. And it can't really be settled by anyone but you and your doctor, and more importantly, your experience and your doctor's knowledge of niacin. The difficulty here, of course, is that most doctors don't know anything about niacin. Leading Dr. William Parsons Jr. at the Mayo Clinic, a terrific niacin researcher, to say the physician must understand niacin in order to use it. For example, the niacin flush. We've talked about that. But the niacin flush can cause some other things. In some sensitive people, they'll have their blood pressure go down. They might feel lightheaded, woozy, might get very itchy, might get nauseous. Their blood sugar might go down or up. There's all kinds of things that can happen with some sensitive people. Niacinamide does not cause these issues, generally speaking. And inositol hexaniacinate don't either. So the concerns we have here are that some people need to have special close medical monitoring when they use niacin. An example would be a chronic alcoholic. When people do a lot of drinking, they're more likely to have trouble with their liver, and they're more likely to have an elevation in liver enzyme tests. Now, you can also have an elevation in liver enzyme tests for a variety of other reasons. One of these is if you take prescribed time-release niacin or prescribed sustained-release niacin. In other words, if the doctor writes a prescription for niacin, it'll be one of the patented versions, and these have the highest reported number of side effects. Pure niacin or niacinamide have the fewest. The amount of niacin that can do you in is unknown because no person has ever died from niacin. We know that in dogs, the dose that will kill half of dogs taking niacin works out to be the human body weight equivalent of half a pound of pure niacin a day.
Wow.
Somewhere around 225,000 milligrams. The highest dose of niacin ever taken was a suicide attempt, and it was tens of thousands of milligrams taken by an angry teenager who said to their mother, you want me to take niacin? I'll show you niacin. And she tried to punish her parents by taking an idiotic amount of niacin. Now, this girl was troubled. She was mentally ill. She was schizophrenic, at least. So she took 60,000 milligrams of niacin. And Dr. Hoffer knows, because he was involved in this eventually. And you know what her result of that was?
She got healthy.
Yeah, the voices she was hearing in her head stopped.
Wow.
And then, and this is the kicker, then she started taking 3,000 milligrams of niacin a day, and she was well. So the amount of vitamin that you need, especially niacin, is very, very variable, and it must be determined with great care, preferably with a physician. And anyone who's taking high doses of niacin for a lengthy period of time should have their liver enzymes tested when they have a physical. These used to be called liver function tests, but they're liver enzyme tests, properly termed. And Dr. Parsons said it is common when you're taking a lot of niacin for those liver enzyme numbers to go up. And that is not a sign of liver pathology, said Dr. Parsons of the Mayo Clinic. He said it is a sign of liver activity. So you want to make sure you keep this in mind. The best analogy I can think of is, guys, if you've ever had a PSA, that's the prostate test, when the PSA numbers are high, that is a sign of prostate activity, and it may or may not be a sign of prostate pathology. For a long time, the high PSA number was equated with you have prostate cancer. We now know that isn't true. You can have a higher PSA and have a perfectly good prostate. The same is true with liver enzymes. You can have an elevation. I don't mean having it skyrocket, but you can have an elevation, a mild elevation, and that just mentions, that just confirms that your liver is at work. Your liver is a detox organ. It's 4 pounds. It's the biggest gland in your body. This thing is enormous. And the liver handles everything. Whatever you take in, whether it's alcohol or drugs, anything at all, your liver is going to handle it. That's what your liver does. Niacin and the other B vitamins are actually very good for your liver, and it's a deficiency of B vitamins that is going to set somebody up for hepatitis or cirrhosis. Many people don't realize just how important vitamins really are. A deficiency of any one of the vitamins is fatal.
Andrew, have you heard any of the new research? Do you know much about the new research on niacin helping treat things like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, I don't know much about it in relation to Parkinson's, but I have seen information on Alzheimer's and also on multiple sclerosis. And the cool part here is that they tested these in animals, not just people. So when they took mice with Alzheimer's disease and gave them niacin, the mice showed cognitive improvement, and they were normal thinking, active, completely altogether mice. And with mice with the mouse equivalent of multiple sclerosis, they actually arrested or reversed MS in mice with niacin. And in each case, they used niacinamide, which doesn't even cause a flush. The amount they used was very close to what Dr. Hoffer and the other niacin research have been recommending, 3, maybe 5,000 milligrams a day. This is doable. You never hear about this on television. You just never do. Multiple sclerosis is a terrible illness. When people get that, they might go down fast. I've seen friends go down in a couple of years from being walking with difficulty to not being able to get out of bed and only able to move their head and shoulders. There are other people who have MS, and they'll get by for years and years, and it minimally affects them. The people that are like that that I know are taking vitamins. So the downside here is pretty small, and the upside is enormous. Multiple sclerosis patients need all the B vitamins. Certainly, they need niacinamide. With Alzheimer's disease, Alzheimer's patients, or for that matter, anyone who's aging or is old, they should be taking niacinamide. But also, there's the rest of the B vitamins. A deficiency of any one of the B vitamins will produce a neurological symptom. All of them. Mm-hmm. And the most spectacular example of this is vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 deficiency clinically almost exactly describes Alzheimer's disease. Wow. So you can't tell, if you're a physician, you can't tell, unless you test, whether a person has Alzheimer's or whether they're B12 deficient. The solution, of course, is everybody that's older, especially men, should be taking methyl cobalamin. That's a form of vitamin B12 that you can buy, take orally or under the tongue, and it's better absorbed than most other forms. The ideal form of B12, especially for the elderly, would be injection. B12 injections have the disadvantage of, number one, not usually being paid for by insurance, and number two, because they go in the muscle, they give you a sore arm for a while. But you don't have that problem with sublingual methylcobalamin B12 tablets. So I'm glad you brought that up. That was a very good idea to ask that. Multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's, the promise here with niacinamide is right off the scale, tremendously valuable. And then we think, now hold on a minute. Niacin's good for heart disease, mental illness, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's disease, and earlier you also said arthritis. How is that possible? How is that possible? And the answer is, look what you can do with water. Mm-hmm. Look what you can do with money. Look what you can do with sunlight. Look what you can do with love. The basic things are good for lots of stuff. Isn't it odd that when a vitamin is good for all kinds of things, people think that it's quacky? But when an antibiotic is good for all kinds of things, we say it's broad spectrum.
Absolutely, man. It's a wonder how much some of these basic nutrients can actually do in our body. I mean, just take, you know, even water, blood, any of those types of things. How many things does it affect? Protein, for that matter, as well, in the body. Andrew, just a couple of quick little questions, man, then we got to wrap things up. I know your time is precious, and I do appreciate you taking this call, man. It's been awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, so actually, just quickly wrapping that up, for the B vitamins, because they are water-soluble, is it typically best to take them in smaller doses? Like, I think even for the Alzheimer's research, they were saying, I think the number was like 250 milligrams or 500 milligrams kind of spaced out throughout the day when you're taking niacin or other B vitamins like that.
Yes, that's exactly what Dr. Kaufman said. He said 250 milligrams 10 times a day, wow, which is 2,500 milligrams, is actually better than 500 milligrams 8 times a day. So dividing the dose is the way to go with any of the water-soluble vitamins, and that is the B complex and vitamin C. You divide the dose up. I tell people, take it as often as humanly possible. Do the best you can. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and between each meal.
Okay.
Dividing the dose means better absorption, more efficient, bang for the buck, better effectiveness, better retention. You're constantly losing vitamins. That's okay. Just like when you breathe out. Do you know when you breathe air out of your body, it still has 2/3 of the oxygen that it had when you breathed in. So expensive urine is not a problem, because having a trickle of extra nutrients in your urine means you've got enough. It's sort of like having enough money to pay the mortgage and pay the grocery bill and have a little extra. That is not a problem. That is a boon. Vitamins are like biochemical money. There's so much you can do with them, and you want to have more rather than not enough. The biggest side effect of vitamins is failure to take enough of them.
What types of vitamins do you take, vitamins, minerals, supplements in general, do you take on a day-to-day basis?
Well, you're not asking me about brands, and I don't answer if I am asked, because I have no financial connection at all with any part of the supplement health products industry. Mm-hmm. As far as what I take every day, it's what I recommend to most people, a good multivitamin, a good natural multivitamin with each meal, the amount of niacin that I mentioned earlier, vitamin C, I take about 18,000 milligrams a day. That's the amount Linus Pauling took. Seems like a good example to follow. I'll take a little extra lecithin, extra vitamin A in the winter, vitamin D, particularly in the winter, a few thousand units of that. And vitamin E is an Edward, which we did not talk about. I take 800 units of vitamin E a day. Remember, what I take and what you take are not necessarily going to match up, nor should you copy me without looking into it. The reason I'm copying Linus Pauling is because I looked into it. I copy Dr. Hoffer because I looked into it. This is not something you can listen to the podcast and say, okay, I'll have a bottle of this, a bottle of that, and a bottle of that, and then you're done. No, what we're doing today, I hope, is urging people to look into this more. My mother used to say, and she'd been a teacher, education should make you want to learn more. And it does. Best way to do that is to read some of my books. Doctor Yourself is the most popular, and that will introduce you with over 400 pages to all aspects of natural healing using vitamins and minerals and other substances that are non-prescription. I also have, for people that want detailed, in-depth education, a huge book called, are you ready for it? The Orthomolecular Treatment of Chronic Disease. This is 500,000 words, 800 pages. It's a huge double column book. It weighs close to 5 pounds, makes a wonderful thud when you drop it on your doctor's desk right after they say there isn't any research showing that vitamins cure disease. Well, yes, there is. And in the Orthomolecular Treatment of Chronic Disease, I and 60 other authors bring forward how vitamin therapy works, and most of those authors are physicians. So Doctor Yourself to get you started, the Orthomolecular Treatment of Chronic Disease to really satisfy your craving for knowledge, and I would recommend that people look at my movie, which is that vitamin movie, and you'll see me take huge amounts of vitamins, and I talk about what I take. There's one scene, by the way, where I take 16,000 milligrams of vitamin C at once on camera.
Wow.
Well, not everybody knows this, but that was actually take two. And during the filming, I was under enough stress where that 32,000 milligrams of vitamin C taken at once didn't even give me saturation symptoms. Now, that does not mean you should go and do it. I'm simply saying that this illustrates how, in some cases, our need for vitamins is very high. As you learn more about this, you're going to have the joy of seeing for yourself, not believing me, but seeing your own experience that this works for you. And isn't that what you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a big fan of taking vitamins and natural supplements for years now, and just I mean, I love taking it. Even the vitamin C now, ever since I've been taking it since the winter, I haven't been sick at all. I've been feeling great. Love it, man. And it's a lot of it is thanks to you and your work. So I appreciate, you know, everything that you do. And also, thanks so much for coming on the show today, man, and you know, just sharing all this great advice with our audience. Just kind of wrapping things up, is there like a last little takeaway message you'd like to leave? And then a place that our listeners can check out more about you? I know you mentioned some of the links. If you want to mention again, you know, you certainly can. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. DoctorYourself.com, my website, which is non-commercial and easy to search. It has its own search engine. You can find any topic you're looking for. I recommend that while you're there, you click the link over to the Orthomolecular Medicine News Service. Now, this is a news feed that we send out periodically. We've done about 200 of them. These are articles specifically on various topics that might be in the news. And this is a peer-reviewed publication, meaning that a panel of doctors, we have about 30 of them, look these over for accuracy. The Orthomolecular Medicine News Service is free of charge by email. You can subscribe for free. There is no advertising. There is no commercial aspect. It's strictly educational. So that's a service for the people that really want to know more. I would recommend that at some point you want to go to my Facebook page, get involved in the dialogue on this. If you have something to say or want to see what other people are talking about, I am known on Facebook as the Mega Vitamin Man. And as far as final thoughts, I'd like to just put this one in front of you. The American Association of Poison Control Centers has been tracking what kills people, what people die from, for not quite 40 years now. And they published a report in peer-reviewed publications every year. The American Association of Poison Control Centers in the last 37 years has 13 allegations that a vitamin was involved in a death. 13 in 37 years. Now, that's about a third of a death per year. Our team looked into that, and we could not find any substantiation or evidence of any of those 13 deaths being caused by a vitamin. They were usually unknowns, and somebody said, well, it must have been a vitamin. No evidence at all. So no one dies from vitamins. If vitamins are so dangerous, as you've been told, where are the bodies? Linus Pauling said, when someone with a lot of degrees, credentials, experience, and gray hair talks to you, Pauling said, listen politely and hear what they have to say, but don't believe them. Look into it and make up your mind for yourself.
Thanks again, Andrew. That is a phenomenal way to sort of wrap things up here. So much great information in today's episode, and I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care, Andrew, and I will talk to you soon.
Great. Well, thanks very much, and it's good to talk to you.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.